Josh Hastin here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is Wednesday, the 13th of March, 2024, the 3rd of Adar Bet 5784. We are gearing up for the holiday of Purim in Israel and throughout the Jewish world. That starts in about 10 days from now, the holiday of Purim. It'll be very interesting to see how Purim is celebrated this year amidst a war which continues down south in Gaza. And at the same time, we essentially have a war going on in the north on the Israeli border with Lebanon and Hezbollah in the north and Hamas in the south. What will this Purim be like? Will it be celebratory? You're supposed to increase your happiness. That is the custom in the Jewish month of Adar. And it is, I think this year is a real challenge to increase that happiness with everything going on. But we must carry on. We must not let our enemies win. We must somehow turn it into a real time of joy as best as we can. And we'll talk more about Purim probably on next week's program. In the meantime, I'm coming to you from beautiful Gush Etzion, just south of Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. It's actually pretty warm outside. It feels like spring, almost summer right now. I know it's not going to last. It's going to go back to winter here in Israel. It usually happens around Purim time. It gets warm and then one last blast of winter before we head into the Passover season. But getting to the news here in Israel, JNS reported today that a very, very senior Israeli official slammed a U.S. intelligence report that claimed Prime Minister Netanyahu's government may be in jeopardy amid ongoing criticism by the Biden administration over Jerusalem's prosecution of the war against Hamas. Those who elect the Prime Minister of Israel are the citizens of Israel and no one else, according to a statement issued to the media on behalf of this Israeli official. Israel is not a protectorate of the U.S., but rather an independent and democratic country whose citizens are the ones who elect the government. We expect our friends to act to overthrow the terror regime of Hamas and not the elected government of Israel, added the official. So there's some meddling going on here, in which certain parties want to see this current administration in Israel gone. The statement issued by this Israeli official comes following Monday's publication of the 2024 annual threat assessment of the U.S. intelligence community, which outlined Washington's expectation that large demonstrations will force Netanyahu's resignation and bring about the replacement of his right-wing government with a more moderate, quote, moderate coalition. This JNS report says that in recent months, the Biden administration has been pushing for the PA to return to power in Gaza as a first step towards a so-called Palestinian state. The White House was reportedly threatened unilateral recognition amid broad opposition to the move in Israel. On Monday, Politico reported that U.S. President Biden is considering conditioning military aid to Israel if Jerusalem moves forward with its conquest of the last Hamas stronghold of Rafiah in southern Gaza. So again, we've seen in the past where presidents of the United States, such as Clinton or Obama, got involved in internal Israeli politics, trying to encourage people to pick Israeli people, to pick the candidate of their liking. And by the way, we are not in an election season. Let's remind people that. Sometimes it seems like we're always in an election season. We've had about five over the last 5-6 years or so. And while I personally might have issues with the current government, number one, I am an Israeli and I have the right to vote for the person or the party that I want in power. Number two, and I think this is extremely important right now, is having elections would give Hamas a hall pass. With resources dedicated towards elections, it would be nearly impossible to run an effective war. So to me, this looks like the Biden administration's way to try and end the war, which would keep Hamas intact, and that is a huge mistake. Of course, Israel must finish this war and win this war. And that involves taking out the remaining Hamas battalions in Rafah, along with trying to free our hostages. So even now, with these threats of cutting off aid, of recognizing a PA state, on and on, all the things that the Biden administration has been doing in recent weeks, Israel must stand firm in the face of this pressure. We must stand firm. And somebody today sent me that quote from 1982, where I think it was Biden himself who threatened to cut Israel aid off to Israel in the war operation Peace of the Galilee in northern Israel. At that time, he was a senator from Delaware, Joe Biden, where he threatened to cut off aid to Israel. And Menachem Begin, Prime Minister Menachem Begin, put Biden in his place, telling him that we, the Jewish people, are not going to stand for his threats. And it seems over the weekend, this past weekend, that Prime Minister Netanyahu took a similar approach, speaking about how Israel would do what is necessary and what the majority of Israelis believe is necessary, and that is finishing this war, going to the very end, destroying Hamas, and nothing short of that. So even with this potential threat of cutting off arms to Israel, if we try to win the war, because that's all we're trying to do, so it's ridiculous to even threaten us that we're not going to be able to have the arms to do so, we'll find a way, and Israel will, in fact, win this war. And that is why I said we must stand firm, following in the footsteps of Prime Minister Begin. We must stand firm in the face of this pressure. Prime Minister Netanyahu on Tuesday, yesterday, said that conquering Rafiah was essential to winning the war against Hamas. In a video addressed to the AIPAC conference in Washington, D.C., Netanyahu said, "To win this war, we must destroy the remaining Hamas battalions in Rafah. If not, Hamas will regroup, rearm, and reconquer Gaza. And then we're back to square one." And that's an intolerable threat that we cannot accept. So that is, it's black and white, folks. Israel must finish the war, win the war, and Rafah is part of it, regardless of what month this is, regardless of if this is Ramadan, and we'll talk about Ramadan in just a few minutes. At the same time here, JNS reported that some 100 U.S. soldiers and four ships set off for the southeastern coast of Virginia, from the southeastern coast of Virginia on Tuesday for the eastern Mediterranean, where they will construct a temporary pier off the coast of Gaza for humanitarian aid. The vessels are carrying equipment and supplies to establish a roll-on, roll-off dock capability that allows ships to shore humanitarian assistance to Gaza, according to the U.S. Central Command. So I just don't get it. I don't get this whole story, okay? We're probably talking about millions and millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars, to take on this project, which from what I understand will take a long time to build, several months. Maybe the war will be even over by then. A better idea, I think, is to force Egypt to open their border, and anyone who wants to leave a war zone can leave a war zone and seek refuge in Egypt, where they can be fed and clothed and taken care of in the Sinai. I mean, I think that's an easier idea, is like opening a gate and letting people flee a war, like in every other war situation, any other conflict in the world, where countries come to the aid of those who are caught in the crossfire. I'm still shocked. Maybe I shouldn't be shocked that after all this time, we're months into a war here, not one of the international players involved, the UN, the US, the Arab world, not one has demanded that Egypt open its border. I mean, they are, as they have been, always holding the PA Arabs as pawns, And again, I have very little sympathy for the PA Arabs, whether in Judea and Samaria or in Gaza. Okay? But that being said, the Arab world is not stepping up for them, and it's making Israel's life much harder. They claim they want to do here is get supplies to people who don't have ties to Hamas. And I don't know how many people fall under that category. How many so-called civilians don't have ties to Hamas, didn't applaud and cheer and celebrate the October 7th massacre? How many of them are out there? Okay. And how's this whole peer system going to work? I mean, are you telling me Hamas won't come and try to attack those taking supplies off this port? Like they're attacking the trucks going in from Israel, going in from Egypt. What am I missing here? What am I not seeing? I don't understand the practicality of this port, which again, millions of dollars and a lot of time and effort, and perhaps even endangering some of these U.S. soldiers. I'm not saying that they're going to fight on Israel's behalf, but putting them potentially in harm's way if Hamas comes to attack this pier or attack people getting supplies off this pier, I think it's a bad idea. I heard our defense minister somehow say this was a positive idea the other day while touring in that area, talking about this port. I don't see it. I don't buy it. I think it's a bad idea. If you really want to help anybody, force Egypt to open their borders. And nobody's talking about it, and it's not happening. Which is unbelievable. Switching gears here. A senior member of Hamas was killed today, on Wednesday, by an Israeli drone strike, according to the IDF. This actually happened in Lebanon. In southern Lebanon, this was a terrorist, Hadi Ali Mustafa, the IDF said had advanced attacks against Israeli and Jewish targets around the world. This was an international terrorist eliminated in the town of Tyre on the Mediterranean coast of southern Lebanon. The military published footage of the strike. In a statement, the IDF described this Mustafa as a significant operative in Hamas's department responsible for its international terrorist activities. He also had directed terrorist cells and activities in the field and advanced terror attacks against Israeli and Jewish targets in various countries around the world. So some good news here, bringing more Hamas senior leaders to justice, doing it the right way, not letting them have three hot meals in an Israeli prison. At the same time, two terrorists killed, four others wounded in an exchange of gunfire between IDF forces and terrorists in the middle of a counter-terror operation in the town of Jenin in northern Samaria this last night, according to Arab media sources. The IDF this morning said that during the operation, soldiers fired at armed men who were identified in the area, and it looks like two terrorists were killed in this operation in Jenin. I mentioned Ramadan before, the Muslim holy month, which is supposed to be a time of peace and introspection and love and harmony and fasting and then feasting. And every single year it turns into a holiday where Muslims try to murder Jews. And this year is no different. We had just the other day, we had what reports indicate were a failed suicide bombing attempt. There was a ticking bomb, as they say, an Arab from the Jenin area on his way to Tel Aviv, from what I understand, to try to carry out a suicide bombing. And thank God he was killed, shot and killed. Our intelligence forces, along with commando units, caught this terrorist, I believe, as he was actually leaving the city of Jenin on his way to Tel Aviv. Thank God for that. So, again, he was trying to celebrate Ramadan his style by carrying out mass murder. At the same time today, not too far from where I'm sitting here in Gush Etzion, Two people lightly injured in a stabbing attack on Route 60 at the tunnel checkpoint that connects Gush Etzion to Jerusalem. The terrorist arrived at the scene, apparently on an electric bike, began stabbing people. He was shot and neutralized. Was he killed? I'm not sure if he was killed. I think he might have been killed. But just another example of violence, attempted violence against the Jews during Ramadan. And here's another one, a 12-year-old, 12 years old. Okay, and I'm not saying that because he deserves sympathy. I'm saying that because it's unbelievable that somebody at that age decided in the Shuafat neighborhood in Jerusalem that he was going to try to murder Israeli security forces. He shot fireworks, and fireworks can be deadly, shooting directly at officers who were trying to maintain calm at the scene, again, in the neighborhood of Shuafat, with disturbances lasting for many hours, rioting, firebombs and explosives thrown at Israeli police, border police, IDF forces, you name it. And then you had a 12-year-old who was shot and killed while trying to hurt our security forces. Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir clarified he backs the police officers, saying, quote, "I back the border police officers who are operating at this time and are risking their lives against dozens of Arab rioters." In this case, he said, Issawiya, another neighborhood in Jerusalem. "I salute the officer who killed the terrorist who tried to shoot fireworks at him. This is exactly how you should act against terrorists, with determination and precision." So again, I'm going to agree with Ben-Gvir on this. And there were other people who in the security establishment who disagreed. But if you try to hurt a member of the Israeli security forces, a firework is a weapon, a knife is a weapon, a gun is a weapon, whatever, a screwdriver, whatever they're using to try to attack our forces, they should not get three meals a day in an Israeli prison. This is the way it should be handled. Only force. And when necessary, deadly force. Because that is all they understand. But again, Ramadan being hijacked yet again here in 2024. Let's see here. Settlers, right? I don't really use that word. Residents of Judea and Samaria, always under the watchful eye of the international community, accused of carrying out acts of violence time and time again. We talk about so-called settler violence. However, the Jewish press reported today that that as Knesset lawmakers grappled with the disruptive effects of foreign anarchists, a police official said that half of the reports of so-called settler violence were manufactured by the agitators. A Foreign Affairs and Defense Subcommittee convened to address allegations of foreign anarchists purporting to be human rights activists harassing Israeli security personnel in Judea and Samaria. So let me just tell you how this works. You have these anarchists and these foreign elements who arrive at Jewish communities, oftentimes on the Sabbath, and cause a riot, start attacking Jews, bring their drums, start protesting and disturbing the Sabbath and acting violently. And then when that happens and Jews respond, then they have their cameras rolling. And that's when they film the so-called settler violence. And that's when they go crazy and the UN puts together reports and claims this is the most violent these so-called settlers have ever been. October 7th, since then, the settler violence has been unprecedented, out of control, crazy, whatever you want to call it. Yet all the police reports, by the way, show that any types of violence between Jews, or I should say directed at Arabs by Jews, is so far down. It's you can count it on one hand. It's completely ridiculous. But again, going back to this Knesset committee meeting, Judea and Samaria District Central Unit Police Commander Avishai Mualim disclosed to lawmakers that half of the 191 complaints of so-called settler violence, this is just one example, reported in the southern Hebron Hills, were deemed false and manufactured by foreigners. Of 70 similar complaints filed with authorities in the Jordan Valley, half were also found to be unsubstantiated. So you have a lot of fake reporting here. In addition to the fact that these attacks are down, The attacks that are reported, according to this report, in the southern Hebron Hills, half manufactured by foreigners. In the Jordan Valley, also half found to be unsubstantiated. So these are people who are coming to harass Jews because of their geography, coming from either Israel or out of the country, anarchists trying to destroy the Jewish way of life. For 500,000, 750,000 Israelis, if you count Jerusalem, and filing these false, unsubstantiated claims that they were attacked by residents of Judea and Samaria. And those accusations, half of the time at least, are absolutely false. And again, and the other half, or the other quarter, or the other whatever it is, are cases where they put on a show, and they only film, and they only show the public the second part of the video after they've already agitated, after they've already attacked, after they've already ruined the Sabbath or holidays, or even during the week for residents of Judea and Samaria. So anytime you see reports on the mainstream media of them using the term settler violence or accusing the Jews or being bad people in Judea and Samaria or whatnot, you have to think twice. You have to get the truth. You have to get the reality. And more often than not, these are made-up accusations. And other times, these are Jews who are defending themselves from this agitation and violence. And that is the part you are seeing on camera. So be weary of the news you consume. And that's going to do it for today, the 13th of March, 2024, the 3rd of Adar Bet, 5784. My name is Josh Haston, coming to you from Gush Etzion. Get in touch with me during the week, josh@thelandofisrael.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Shout out to Tabitha Epstein for everything she does behind the scenes. Benjamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Check out all the quality podcasts and programming on the Land of Israel Network. Continue to pray for the safety of our IDF soldiers, for our hostages. Let's hear only good news from Gaza. Let's only hear good news from the northern border, from Judea, Samaria, Jerusalem, everywhere else throughout the Jewish state. Only good news. Wishing everyone out there a wonderful week. Shalom, shalom from Gush Etzion, the hills of Judea, just south of Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. Have a great week, everyone.